one of the things that I have to characterize as cruises is this, to me, it feels like, for me, the Cutter Q Suites of cruising. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, Cutter Q Suites, I thoroughly enjoy. I think it is a great product, and it is a great product. But sometimes I unfairly judge it, and I unfairly judge it because I have relatively high expectations of things. And I continually find myself comparing Cutter Q Suites to first class, right? And so I think I found myself doing the same thing a lot of times, especially on the food here at Virgin.
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we head back to the high seas and we chat Virgin Voyages and perhaps even a little bit of Symphony of the Seas. Tom, welcome back on dry land. How are you today?
Ahoy, Captain Trevor. Permission to step aboard the SS Travel Stories?
I think we might have taken this a little bit too far, but I'm here for it. I'm all in.
Oh, come on. You love everything nautical. I mean, don't pretend otherwise, right?
I do. And with past episodes, in fact, I think we've talked boating in one way or another on the last two or three episodes, but we didn't talk cruising.
I know. We've had a little bit of a hiatus on cruising talk, haven't we?
We have. And I'm really excited about this episode. And when you told me that you ended up booking Virgin Voyages, on points, no less, I was really, really excited. I'm very jealous, I might add, as well, because this is something that I don't believe I'll be able to do for quite some time until our daughter is of an age where we feel comfortable leaving her with family or some other trusted soul. So I'm truly vicariously living through you and your experiences on Virgin. And I say this making the assumption that our listeners know that Virgin Voyages are adult only, an adult only cruise line.
Well, now they know. No kids.
No kids.
Yeah, I think some of the funniest shirts people were wearing was, you know, F them kids shirts, you know, on the cruise.
Yes, but how old were those people?
They were our age. Yeah, they were our age.
Oh, shame on them. Shame.
No, I vicariously lived through others too, because, you know, Virgin Voyages isn't exactly new. They've been around for a couple of years, although they must have the worst timing as far as, you know, when to launch a new cruise brand, right? Right in the middle of the pandemic. I mean, they could not have timed it worse to introduce a brand new brand to the world of cruising. So, you know, and this is not the first time that Virgin Voyages has offered a points-based redemption, right? They do this every once in a while for maybe short periods of time where they have cruises available to use your Virgin Atlantic miles on, which, so when it came back up, this, I think it was back in May, I was like, let's do it. Let's pull the trigger because I wanted to try out this new cruise line.
So walk us through the cost before we get into the cruise line itself. There's always a transfer bonus going on with something.
Yeah.
Did you leverage that as well?
And I did.
And how do they do the cost? Is it per cabin or per person?
So I'll walk it through. I paid 115,000 Virgin points, which is a nice chunk, you know, a pretty good chunk of points. I did benefit from the fact that they were doing a 30% transfer bonus at the time. I think it was to Amex. But, you know, they do so many of these transfer bonuses throughout the year. So there are probably lots of opportunities for you to transfer your Virgin points, you know, better than one-to-one, right, with the major transferable currencies. So 115,000, it's definitely higher than I think the last time they offered it. It seems like there's a trend here where every time they offer this, they kind of step up the cost a little bit. But I would say it's still a pretty good value because, you know, honestly, this was for the entire cruise fare for a 5-night cruise, whether you had one person on board in the room or two people. So it's for single or double occupancy. So 115,000, I mean, for two people, I mean, if you're basically, even without the transfer bonus, what is that, like 57,500 points or something like that?
That's cheaper than getting to Europe in business
class. It is.
Well, maybe not on Virgin, but you got to pay a lot for that. But if you compare it to just normal stuff.
And it's not a couple hours of free-flowing food and entertainment. It's, you know, several days worth of entertainment and food and lodging and et cetera. So, I mean, I'm trying to think what the equivalent would be. I mean, that's like two nights at an all-inclusive with Hyatt maybe, right? It would be the equivalent of what that is from transferable points currency, and this ends up being 5 nights. So
yeah, yeah, that's probably accurate. I think some are less, some are more. But if you're thinking 80, 82,000 points, you know, if you consider the Hyatt points, yeah, you'd probably be looking at two nights at an all-inclusive versus five. And you get to go play too.
Exactly. There is some additional costs. It's about $180 of taxes and fees per person on top of the points out of pocket. But there's a lot of stuff included that is not normally included. So I know if I get a complimentary cruise from one of the other cruise lines, that typically gratuities are not included. They are included in Virgin Voyages. So when you get a complimentary cruise, whether it be from, you know, a casino or from this redemption side, they aren't charging you extra for the gratuities, which is usually like $18 or something on a lot of the other cruise lines per day per person. So that does add up.
Now, are gratuities included for everyone on Virgin Voyages, or is this just if you use Virgin points?
I think it's for everyone. I think that's just their pricing model. Like when they give you the fare,
nice,
they're throwing in, and there's some other inclusions too. So things like basic soda and beverages, that's included, which would be an extra or a kind of like a light beverage plan on a lot of other cruise lines. And so is basic Wi-Fi. So, you know, I don't think you can stream very well, but you can at least do your social medias, upload stuff, you know, check your email, do your websites, check into your airlines, all that stuff, check the news. You know, they'll have a basic Wi-Fi package for one device. And they do, I think, limit it to one device. I think they are checking because I think when you log in, it'll give you an IP limiting message if you try to bring another phone or laptop or something. So.
Interesting. Interesting. So, I mean, effectively, you're getting no resort fee.
Exactly.
If we were to put this into on land parlance.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, and we'll go to a little bit more when we go into the food, is, you know, usually with these type of cruises, they have kind of a main dining room, a main buffet, and then they have specialty restaurants you can kind of upcharge into, right? You can pay more to dine better. It's a lot more egalitarian on Virgin. There's really not a lot of options to upcharge or pay into more exclusive dining. And essentially, they have several specialty dining venues that would be, I think, a pay-for dining specialty experience on another cruise line that are just included with your cruise fare. That is where you're eating every night, essentially.
Wow, that's great. So what you're kind of laying out, if I may, is that Virgin Voyages is really a premium cruise line and in a different way than Princess or Celebrity is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the model is very different. I think you could probably put it in the same class in a way as Celebrity and Princess, but really the cruise fare itself just is much more inclusive. It's like you're cruising Princess or Celebrity, but you've already prepaid a lot of stuff. So in other words, if I had to really do an apples to apples comparison with a, let's say, a Celebrity cruise, I'd probably have to assume that I bought an ultimate dining package where I'm dining out at a specialty dining every night and I'm, you know, have bought some sort of basic Wi-Fi package and basic like kind of soda package or something like that.
And that just goes to speak how Branson is just awesome with a lot of the offerings that he does. And I do want to add, we sort of gleaned over it when you mentioned them launching during a pandemic. But as I understand it, all of their ships were purpose-built specifically for Virgin Voyages. This isn't like a Margaritaville where they're like, you know, reusing or have bought like an old Costa ship. These are purpose-built specifically for the Virgin Voyages vision.
They absolutely are. And in some cases, for better and worse, there are definitely some characteristics about these ships that are, in some cases, great. Others, I don't know if I cared for some parts of it, to be completely honest, but we can go into that later.
Yeah, yeah. Before we get into that, let's just cover. So you were on the Valiant Lady, if I understand, and you were on a 5-night cruise. Where did you start? Where did you go?
Started in Miami, had two ports. It stopped at Puerto Plata in the Dominican Republic, and that was good for me because I had actually never been to the Dominican Republic until this cruise. They also had a great stop at Bimini, which is an island in the Bahamas. They have their own beach club there, and we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later as well. But those were the two ports, and then two sea days. So it was a 5-night total cruise.
Nice, easy. It sounds like, you know, kind of a low stress, nice, relaxing type thing.
It was.
One of the stress points for me with any cruise, as you know, and some of our listeners probably know as well, is the embarkation and disembarkation. Being a new cruise line, maybe their processes aren't as refined as, say, a Royal Caribbean, where we've observed, and I think we've chronicled on the pod many times, that they really have their stuff together. How was embarkation and disembarkation on the Valiant Lady?
I think it wasn't bad, but they have not quite, I think, optimized the whole process as well as Royal has. I think they do have their own terminal in Miami where a lot of their Caribbean, you know, sailings are going to originate or, you know, end. And there's a couple of quirks. You know, they're one of the few cruise lines that I'm aware of that have disembarkation time or embarkation time, I should say, relatively late. So I think the earliest you could get on the ship is 2 p.m. That's even for like their kind of VIP rock star suite type passengers, I think. That's probably the earliest. I think we snagged the second earliest for, you know, the normal people, which is 2:30 p.m. And there were some advantages to that, actually, because, you know, the nice thing about Port of Miami is, you know, there's so much infrastructure there, but, you know, there are so many ships leaving at the same time. I mean, any day at Port of Miami, you could have, you know, five or six cruise ships departing at the same time or the same date. And having that kind of later embarkation time is actually nice because, you know, the kind of Uber situation, you know, you don't have to worry as much probably of possibly getting a surge pricing type situation. And in general, the traffic to and from the port will be a little bit less crazy because we're kind of off-timed a little bit.
And that makes a ton of sense. And I could see that as a bonus. Now, is the ship leaving later as well? Is that why you're doing the later embarkation? Or
I think
are
it
there
is.
Just fewer people?
It is a smaller, and compared to like an Oasis class ship that has, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 guests, this one's only about 2,000 plus. So definitely smaller total number of people. But as far as sailing time, yeah, I think we were scheduled to depart. I forget, like potentially like 6 p.m. or something like that. But we ended up leaving much later than that. I think it was closer probably to 7 or after before we actually left the Port of Miami. But in any case, yeah, I think there's some good parts about, you know, having kind of a later, embarkation and departure time. One of which was, you know, our rooms were ready the minute we'd stepped on board, which is, you know, I know for most of the other cruise lines, if you kind of get on board early in the morning or like in the late morning, I should say, like 11 a.m. or something like that, you're usually not going to get into your actual cabin until like 1 or 2 p.m.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge for a lot of people. I mean, I know I like to get away from the huge crowds myself. And so if you don't have the huge crowds because a subset of people are able to already get into their staterooms, that's a huge deal. So speaking of the rooms, tell us about them. You had a balcony, I think?
Yeah, so they call them sea terraces. I guess they got a phrase for everything. Instead of wanting to call it what everybody else calls it. Essentially, yeah, I had a balcony cabin. And it was nice. It was well-decorated, well-equipped. Definitely a reasonably nice place to stay for a couple of days. I will say, brace yourselves. I think if you ever watch any YouTube's video coverage of Virgin Voyages, you'll know. Got to be the smallest bathroom I've ever had in a cruise ship. It is very tiny. I mean, it is enough space to get in the shower. It was not enough space for me to unfurl a towel and dry myself off. I was like, where does my elbow go? You know?
This is sounding a lot like the Etihad Airways apartments A380 lav.
What a good, tiny. What a good comment, you know? Yeah. So if you've had the pleasure of taking a shower in Etihad apartments, I think you'll be fine. But just have that expectation as far as the amount of personal, because honestly, the bathroom sizes are pretty comparable. One kind of note for the balcony cabins is they all come with a hammock. And normally I'd say this is a gimmick and like, you know, nobody would use it, but I found it to be very comfortable. I think the overwhelming experience of everybody is they like the hammock. The hammock is whatever magic they do to install it and have it, it's strangely very comfortable. And it's very nice.
That makes a lot of sense. You're on a ship. It's swaying naturally. The hammock is just going to lull you right to sleep with the motion of the ocean.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that would just be an incredible improvement just for any ship. I could see just kind of dozing off there. I know that some of our friends in the past have actually slept on the balconies. This to me would be the absolute ideal approach.
I agree. Whenever I see something like that, I'm thinking, how did the lawyers allow this, you know, but you know, cause you know, I'm just thinking like, okay, how many personal injury, you know, type lawsuits is going to come out of this, but it is kind of genius. And I wouldn't be surprised if other cruise lines copied this as long as, you know, they're able to figure out how to limit their personal injury damages. But strangely enough, you know, like what I was thinking is, you know, typically with a cruise passenger, you know, let's just say the demographic might be a little bit older, you know, and seeing somebody like kind of climb into one of these things and do it in a kind of not so elegant way and hurt themselves. I guess it just is happening less on Virgin because the demographic is very different, right? It's a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. So anyway, just to go on a little tangent there.
Well, I think they've got the demographic pegged and some of the benefits pegged. Although I have to say, I'm a little bit nervous. If you were to get an interior room, does that mean that your lav or your head, your restroom is going to be the size of a 737's restroom or worse, an E190? I mean, how much smaller can these things get?
I don't think it's any smaller than what's in the balcony cabin because you just couldn't squeeze it down anymore. They pretty much are at the limit for space, I think, for this bathroom and to be able to actually take a shower and, you know, brush your teeth and everything. Yeah, I don't know.
If this wasn't a family podcast, I could say that these heads would be an S cubed where you could do all showering, shaving and such without having to move where you're standing. It sounds like it's almost there.
You know, definitely brace yourself. The other thing that nobody kind of warned us about, and you definitely have not seen in the socials or on YouTube or elsewhere with, you know, the various influencers, you know, reviewing the Virgin product, is the configuration of the room when you don't want the queen bed in a queen bed configuration. Like, so if you're, you know, in this case, I was cruising with a friend of mine and we didn't choose to sleep right next to each other. So I did have the mattresses kind of separated and they do it in a weird way. They do it in like kind of an L configuration instead of just like taking the two mattresses and like kind of like, you know, setting them aside with a nightstand in between. Basically, this is, I think, a legacy of a kind of a failed thing that they tried, an innovation that they tried where the cabins can be kind of turned into kind of a sectional sofa. The bed can be turned into kind of a L-shaped sectional, you know, couch by your room attendants. Very few people, I think, actually do this. You know, they just leave it in the bed configuration because it's kind of annoying because, you know, you have to call them and they got to come in, they got to do a lot of stuff. And I guess they were trying to make some idea of like, oh, let's try to find a way that we can have people have a place to lounge during the day and then a place to sleep at night and not have to give them, you know, not have to create separate spaces for those items. But yeah, I think it's a failed attempt. It's another thing where they tried to do something innovative and I don't think it works.
I love the idea of trying to innovate. Not everything is going to work. I mean, I have to believe that just sounds weird. So somebody gets feet in their face, for lack of a better way of saying. I mean, you know, a little separate separation, but
yes, I mean, yes.
Is that about it?
That's about right. That's about right. Yes. Yes.
And not only that, but like, you know, whether you're perpendicular or parallel to the beam of the ship, that actually can change your experience at night because you are swaying and stuff. And if you're like parallel with the ship, which most cabins have the beds doing, that's a better experience for a lot of people. Whereas if you're perpendicular, you're kind of going, whoa, you know, your head's above your feet are above your head. I mean, I can imagine that changing the quality of your sleep.
Yeah, I think this is indicative of kind of like it's some design decisions that they made at Virgin. They have a lot of beautiful spaces, but I will tell you the other big theme that I experienced was lots of seating that is uncomfortable. So, you know, it may look gorgeous. It may be something that you could find in Architectural Digest or something, but it's whether it be, you know, on the top deck, whether it be in the public spaces and the bars, you know, just everywhere. They're just various chairs where you will sit down and you'll be like, huh, that is not someplace I want to sit for any extended period of time.
So style over comfort.
Absolutely.
Style over
a
function.
A lot of style over comfort. And, you know, I guess this is a ship built for the Instagram generation. So.
Well, now let's get to some of that Instagrammable stuff, right? So you said that Virgin doesn't have a main dining room and instead is just a bunch of these specialty dining rooms. Obviously, there's going to be some friction, I'd imagine, in figuring out how to maximize your experience in these dining rooms.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about your strategies for kind of ensuring that you reduced that friction, number one, and then let's start talking through some of those food options because I got to believe that if there's something that's going to be Instagrammable on that ship, it's going to be this incredible food that you've talked about.
Yeah. And just as you said, you know, I think some of the decisions they've made, you know, in cuisine have also been done, again, for that kind of let's make sure everything looks pretty and is from an Instagram perspective is amazing. And I think it is, you know, and to the fact where, you know, again, I think one of the things that I have to characterize as cruises is this, to me, it feels like, for me, the Cutter Q Suites of cruising. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, Cutter Q Suites, I thoroughly enjoy. I think it is a great product, and it is a great product. But sometimes I unfairly judge it. And I unfairly judge it because I have relatively high expectations of things. And I continually find myself comparing Cutter Q Suites to first class, right? And so I think I found myself doing the same thing a lot of times, especially on the food here at Virgin, where I'm pretty much comparing everything. Okay, if I'm in an Italian restaurant, I'm going to go ahead and compare to a paid Italian restaurant on another cruise line. If I'm in a steakhouse on Virgin Voyages, I'm going to compare that to another steakhouse that I might have paid money, extra money for on another cruise line. Whether or not that's a fair comparison, you know, whether I'm being fair with my kind of judgment on these things, I don't know. What do you think, Trevor?
You know, I think that's a little bit of a tough answer. I mean, I think because you have no dining room, you're logically associating it with something that should be at a higher level. But the reality is you're not paying extra for it. So, I mean, you'd be thinking, yeah, I mean, I totally see how you could fall into that hole where you're expecting the Italian to be a Jamie Oliver caliber experience. And maybe they fall short of that. Maybe they don't. Maybe they fall short of that in some areas. But the reality is you're comparing something that you're paying extra for over and above the cruise to something that Virgin just wants to present as
complimentary.
I mean, it really sounds to me like you got onto this ship and you were expecting Crystal Cruise Lines, and maybe your expectations were a little bit too high for what Mr. Branson can deliver.
I did fall into that trap of having super high expectations. And in some cases, they were met. You know, I think there were some really great experiences from a food perspective on Virgin. And for sure, you know, Virgin not having any main dining rooms, I'll say first and foremost, pretty much all the food is better than what I would find in a main dining room on, like, let's say Royal Caribbean, or in the buffet, the Windjammer on Royal Caribbean. You know, everything is going to be better than that. However, not every specialty restaurant I felt was kind of as good as you would expect, or even as the, you know, Instagram photos might indicate.
Well, and I can totally imagine that, right? Because immediately when you've decided that you're going to go, I think you've got one of these in our show notes, Gunbao or Gunbae Korean barbecue, you're immediately going in saying, I'm expecting some really good Korean barbecue here. I'm not going to go here and order a pasta dish. I'm not going to order, you know, a taco. Maybe there are some Korean barbecue tacos, but I'm not ordering a pasta dish here. I'm expecting some good Korean barbecue. And so you already have set your expectations far higher than what you would have set for the main dining room on the Symphony of the Seas, for example, where, you know, they might say it's Italian night and you're like, yeah, I've heard that before.
They have Italian parsley.
Exactly.
You know, Gunbae is a really good example of like kind of some of the expectations you have to set. And that's interesting. You know, it's a shared restaurant. So, you know, unless you have more than like 6 or 7 people, you know, in your party, which is pretty rare on, I think, Virgin Voyages, you know, because most of the parties are a little smaller, especially given that there aren't, you know, huge families by and large, you're going to be at a shared table. And the funny thing is, just as you said, if I'm going to a Korean barbecue, I'm probably going to expect I'm going to be eating some meat. Of course, we were at the table with some vegetarians, which I was like, why are you coming to a Korean barbecue? But anyway, all right. To each their own, I guess. To each their own. I will say this was our first meal on board, and it was nice because it kind of forces you to be social when you're at, you know, a table of strangers, right? And I have to give credit to Virgin Voyages for making the attempt. I mean, come on. They're the only ones that have done Korean barbecue at sea. So that's a pretty bold try. As somebody who is from the Korean diaspora and, you know, son of Korean immigrants, I kind of intentionally tried some of the stuff they had on the menu. And I was like, how the hell are they going to make this work? And I was like, they didn't make it work. But you know what? It was a very social, very fun, even though it was a very long meal, again, because they ended up cooking all these like vegetarian things on the grill for the one vegetarian person. And then subsequently started putting some meat and other things onto the grill there.
A little tofu kimchi going on.
Yeah, some mushrooms and some other things. But, you know, at the same time, it was fun. They really made it a point of making people do this loud Korean drinking game. And, you know, that was fun. That was fun to kind of see some of that going on. So I still give it high marks, even though I honestly didn't particularly think the food was good.
Yeah, but I mean, in some cases, it's the experience that you come away from.
Exactly.
And it sounds to me like the experience was a win, so much so that it probably overshadowed the subpar food.
Correct. I think you got it spot on. I think you pretty much well distilled what happened there.
So you've got a couple others in this list, and I just have to ask you about them. We'll get to Test Kitchen after this, but I got to ask, what is this Razzle Dazzle?
So Razzle Dazzle, I would say, you know, and by the way, before I even do that, let me just mention one other quick thing, Trevor. Quick tip, you know, make dining reservations, you know, so they open 45 days out. Make those reservations as quickly as you can. I dilly-dallied, I think, one day, and a lot of the non-like 9 o'clock dining times were gone. So they will make more available later. And there's also the possibility to walk in and do some other things. So it's not like it's the end of the world if you don't get a reservation. But because everybody has to dine at these specialty restaurants, you know, they book up pretty quick, especially the earlier times. And I got to tell you, it's kind of interesting. It's funny. You know, you look for the silver hairs and the blue hairs. They are on top of it. You know, they're the one. So, you know, the one time we did eat at like, you know, early, like 5:30 or 6 or something like that, the demographics of the diners was so different because, you know, all the blue hairs and all those silver hairs were, they knew exactly. They were like, oh, dining reservation, dining reservation, dining reservation. They were the ones who snapped up all these things quick. And, you know, it was all of the rest of us normal people that were dining later in the evening.
So what you're saying is that the blue and silver hairs understand the early Southwest check-in process,
yes,
or at least the former Southwest check-in process, since I think Southwest is departing the sort of like, you know, everyone board at the same time or, you know, open seating. Yeah. They have understood that process. And as a result, they have the early bird special.
Yep. So Razzle Dazzle was the only restaurant that we did not try for dinner. We did go for brunch. Let me tell you why, because they are the plant-based, vegetarian-focused restaurant. And I will tell you, they are the ones where don't rush to get a reservation at Razzle Dazzle. They're the ones that are pretty much available every night.
Ooh.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sorry. If those of you out there that are vegan, that are vegetarian, I think some of you may actually love this, you know, because, you know, they are making such a plant-based and kind of make accommodations for, you know, those who are trying to eat a little healthier and also, you know, avoid meat. So it's great that they have the option, but I think the reality is the vast majority of people who were cruising were not in the vegan vegetarian category. So this was the one that had the least competition for choice dining times.
So Razzle Dazzle is all name and not necessarily protein.
They have some meat options, believe it or not, but it would be the minority of the menu. So they'll have like, I think a special burger, like a specialty burger or something. We had it for brunch. We had the chicken sandwich. It was a gigantic chicken sandwich. And for brunch, they had like bacon. So the two non-vegetarian things were chicken sandwich and bacon. We did order both, but yeah, I don't know. We were more razzled than dazzled for the most part.
Well played. Well played. Okay. So you've got a couple other on your list.
Yes.
Clearly, I might have stepped in something with this razzle dazzle. I'm scared to ask how the Test Kitchen was.
So, you know, the funny thing is the second night we dined out, we went to the Italian place and we had very low expectations, mainly because I think we had watched a YouTube person do a video and they kind of commented it was unremarkable. And that was by far our best dining experience, was at Extra Virgin. The restaurant itself was the least interesting and or decorate, you know, it was like, because, you know, it's like that particular restaurant, low ceilings, very homey kind of atmosphere, not very bling blingy like the rest of the ship. But the thing is, strangely enough, we had the best server that we had the entire cruise service for dinner. Very like, you know, anticipatory, like made sure to get our beverages ready and made sure that we were never, you know, without, you know, refills and such. Really recommended lots of stuff. In fact, we overordered big time. Like, you know, he was like, oh, go ahead and try this. Go ahead and try that. And we said, oh, we want the small portion of pasta. And of course, you know, this gigantic bowl comes out.
This is saying something because you typically like to try everything and you,
I do.
You typically do order a fair bit.
I am not a shy orderer, especially on a cruise ship. And this is the embodiment of Manja Manja here at Extra Virgin. It was a really good experience. The porcini marinated steak, one of the best steaks. Honestly, better than the steak at the steakhouse. Wow. The pastas were all wonderful. Everything was really great. I would say the only weak thing would probably be the dessert, but I feel like in general, for some reason, Virgin Voyages has, that's probably their weakest thing is desserts. For some reason, they don't have amazing desserts for the most part. They're pretty ordinary. I don't know if that they just don't have enough pastry chefs or something. I don't know. But my experience was that there weren't too many dessert courses that were really worth talking about or even being – I can't even remember them because they were all very unremarkable.
Oh, that's a real shame.
So some of you with a sweet tooth will have to make some accommodations, I think.
So we covered Korean barbecue. We covered extra virgin Italian. You had five nights. I see a couple of other restaurants here. Did you do Pink Agave or Test Kitchen?
Did both. We did pretty much five specialty restaurants. We did The Wake, which is their steakhouse. This was very underwhelming. And strangely enough, because this is the one that has the hardest time getting a table, you know, as the steakhouse. You know, it's the one that I guess is the more the common denominator for everybody. They want to get in there. It is a very beautiful, elegant restaurant. But I felt like this is one of the situations where if I were to compare this to one of the other steakhouses, let's say Chops Grill on Royal Caribbean or Cagney's on Norwegian or, you know, one of the other premium steakhouses on the other cruise lines, this is where they fail. This was not in the same league, I think, as, you know, the other paid options for steakhouses. Maybe it's because I think I had a filet mignon. I did have the rack of lamb, which was good. But just in general, it felt, you know, the tables are very close together, so you don't really have a lot of space. It's kind of like the bathroom. It's tight. So you're sitting next to your neighbor, which is great because, you know, you end up having lots of, you know, social interaction and chatting because, you know, you don't really have to speak loud for them to hear you because they're right next to you.
There you go.
So I wouldn't be having any private conversations or anything while you're having dinner.
Yeah, steak's just not a private experience at The Wake, apparently.
No, it really isn't. But even the food quality, I just, you know, when you go to a steakhouse, there's a standard, right? You know, you go to a Ruth's Chris or you go to, when you're on land, you go to a premium steakhouse, there's certain things you expect. And some of them are really, really competent sides. And I think part of the problem is the number of covers they're doing each night, you know, the number of diners, right, that they have to accommodate, it's a large number. It's a large number. It's probably the biggest restaurant on the ship. And I think when you go to that situation where suddenly it becomes a little bit more commoditized because of the number of people that you're serving, I think that's where probably the problem comes into. It probably suffers from being the largest restaurant on the ship.
Yeah, definitely. And that makes sense. I mean, it's also the highest in demand. I mean, when I get on a cruise ship, I expect to eat, you know, half a cow. I mean, I hate to say it as bluntly as that, but I expect to eat a fair bit of beef.
I'm pretty sure if you're paying $2,400 on cruises for the week or for 5 days, I'm sure you're expecting to eat $2,400 worth of food.
Yeah, yeah. So let's move. We got two more restaurants before we sort of close out the dinners. Mexican Fusion, Pink Agave. Tell us about that.
That was probably the second best restaurant on the ship, definitely from food quality wise. It was very good. Steak here was also very good. It came with cheese, which is not usually, I don't usually like my steaks enrobed in cheese, but this worked, I think, in general, from a flavor perspective. Again, service in here was great. It's quite a bit smaller than The Wake, but yeah, food quality, excellent. So it definitely would be on the not to miss, you know, if you were going to do a Virgin Voyages cruise. Test Kitchen is probably the most divisive restaurant. It's molecular gastronomy. It's basically they have a menu where they're bringing out, you know, lots of kind of unique preparations of food. I enjoyed quite a few things that they provided on the menu, and I also disliked quite a few of the things. And I think a lot of people were probably similarly involved where they would probably dislike maybe half the menu.
Just for our listeners, we've talked about a restaurant called Wonderland on the Royal Caribbean. I hear molecular gastronomy, and I think that, you know, essentially Test Kitchen is very much like Wonderland. Is that a fair assessment?
It would be the closest analog to Royal Caribbean. Absolutely. In fact, any restaurant where you're going to be presented with a dish under glass and a whole puff of smoke comes out, I mean, that is that little fad thing that they love to use at these kind of restaurants.
Oh, yeah. They love the smoked drinks, the smoked beverage, or dishes nowadays. I have not embraced that fad. I probably need to try it at some point, but the smokiness sort of is not my flavor profile. So one of the interesting things I think that you shared is that, you know, every ship, at least that I've been on, has a buffet. And that's a fairly common expectation, right? Because not everybody wants to sit, you know, get dressed up.
Yes.
Sit for an hour, 2 hour long meal. But Virgin Voyages does it differently. Tell us about that, if you could.
They do. They call it the galley. It's the buffet. You know, this is another one where they try to be innovative. You know, they basically have a menu, or they have like QR codes, and you can look at what's available at the time, whether it be breakfast, dinner, or lunch. And then you can like kind of raise a little manual like flag, you know, to flag down a worker to go ahead and take an order for something. This doesn't really work. So people just go up to the stands and just order. Like I tried this once. I was waiting for like maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then I just literally had to like, you know, grab a person and be like, hey, you know, I have this flag up. How does this work? And I did eventually get my order, which was nice because, you know, I didn't have to wait in line at the ramen place. I didn't have to wait in line at the taco place. The person just came and brought me all those things. I could see the concept being good. Again, the execution, the reality is people just go up to the food hall stations and just order their own food. And that is like 99% of how that is done. So it might not be a buffet where there's like you aren't scooping or ladling food onto your own plate. Yes, that's true. But the reality is it's a buffet. And I actually think, again, my expectations were high about something like this. I think the other reality is if you're not going during the like prime lunch hour, half the stations are closed. So there was like a panini station, a ramen station, a taco station. All three of those, if you weren't right there between like 11 and 2 maybe, or 1, or I don't know, hours varied, you weren't getting any ramen or tacos or sandwiches.
That almost just sounds like the story of the pandemic era. But we're beyond that right now. And I would expect that, you know, they would have appropriately staffed their folks. Okay, so let's power through the rest of the food we've got here. Every ship has ice cream and pizza. How Yes. does the Valiant Lady weigh in for ice cream and pizza?
It's a good way to kind of judge a ship. You know, I think the more premium the ship, the better their pizza better be, and the better their ice cream better be. I would say they're probably among the best ice cream I've ever had because they had essentially with relatively good hours, you know, they had an ice cream shop with rotating flavors, you know, of ice cream scooped up, you know, on cones and dishes as you please. And also very high quality, lots of interesting flavors. So I think it's good. They didn't have soft serve, you know, which is kind of what we're used to, for, I think, from a Royal Caribbean standpoint.
Yeah, definitely.
They had a very nice ice cream parlor.
And was that ice cream additional or was that included since they didn't have soft serve?
Included.
Oh, you know, as a comparison, you're paying for the Ben & Jerry's on Royal Caribbean, but you are getting the flavor of your choice on the Valiant Lady.
I agree. I think what would be an extra upcharge situation on some other ships, this was complimentary and relatively available.
Love it.
Pizza, similarly, relatively high, although when I tried it was good. I think there were some complaints on the Facebook group about them changing the cheese somewhere mid-journey, mid-voyage, and getting some negative feedback. But this was a made-to-order pizza place. The only big downside is it was busy a lot of the time, and there was always going to be a couple of minute wait before you get your pizza. Because again, it was made to order. So they didn't really have like pizza stacked up ready to go, you know, for you, which is both good and bad, right? Obviously, you're getting a much better product because it is made to order. Fresh product. But, you know, of course, it was, you know, you give up a little bit of your time to do that.
It's always a balance. I'll take the quality. I'll take the freshness other than something that's been sitting under the oven.
The heat lamp.
Yeah, the heat lamp. There you go.
I have to make one other shout out for one other venue that I spent quite a bit of time at called the Social Club, which was this area with a couple of, you know, bar games. Like they had, you know, snooker, and they had a bunch of board games just kind of lying out there with tables and a bar area that was serving, you know, bar food, like, you know, wings and pretzels with beer cheese and hot dogs and stuff, popcorn that was kind of available throughout the day, which is just a nice place just to hang out and just, you know, enjoy your sea day. Right. And they also did like trivias and other activities in there. That was another nice place, you know, again, some nice food items that, you know, in some cases you're not going to get complimentary things like, you know, chicken wings and things like that.
Oh, so that was complimentary. That's a double bonus. Yeah, that's definitely not what you'd experience on Royal Caribbean.
That's correct.
So it sounds like a lot of the food is definitely complimentary, where you're getting better quality food in some cases compared to what you'd have to pay for on other ships or on other cruise lines.
Yes.
So let's close out the food with, I think you've got a room service hack that you want to share.
I do. Because, you know, this was shared with us. You know, again, you're sitting next to a lot of your dining mates and they're hearing you talk. And, you know, of course, that just results in just, you know, some ad hoc or, you know, out of the blue kind of conversation. And they shared this hack with me, you know, and that if you're going to do room service, you know, room service is something that typically has a $10 delivery fee. But if you charge a alcoholic beverage, like a $7 beer, do that instead, and you'll get a free beer, or not a free beer, but you'll not have to pay the $10 delivery charge. You'll just pay the charge for the alcoholic beverage. And this is a great time to stock up on stuff. Like, we only did room service once during this entire voyage, but we loaded up on gummy bears and chocolate covered pretzels and, you know, and again, soda's free, but, you know, you can actually get the room service like canned soda, so you can have them in your little mini fridge for later in the cruise, you know, if you want to either take them off when you're at the port, or you just want to have something for the middle of the night. We got a couple of cans of soda delivered as well, you know, and lunch as well. So this was a gigantic order. It was like 17 items.
Let me just clarify this for myself, really, and for our listeners.
Yes, please do.
What you're saying is that there's a $10 delivery fee to have what would otherwise be free food delivered to your room.
Correct.
And if you order a $7 beer, that delivery fee is waived. And the free cans of, or the cans of soda, the gummy bears, the snacks, the lunch, all that stuff that they're also delivering, all those 17 or I suppose 16 items other than that $7 beer, all that's gratis. All that's included.
Correct.
Is that correct? That is incredible. That is quite the hack.
It is quite the hack. And I'd even think about, you know, asking for cans of soda, you know, which was, again, you know, soda's free on this, but, you know, it's nice to have a can of soda, but those aren't readily available at a bar or in the restaurant or those other places. Cause, you know, they've got fountain sodas all over the place, fountains for you to kind of just fill up your glass or, you know, your carafe or whatever. So it's a smart thing to do. It's a nice little hack. It's interesting how they also deliver the room service. They come in these like diver wet bags, you know, kind of like stacked in these round bento box kind of containers. So it's just really interesting, you know, instead of having this person come in with a cart and like a big tray of like plates with, you know, covers on top, which is what I'm used to on like Royal Caribbean. This one lady, even though we had like this ridiculous amount of food and snacks and beer and sodas and everything, that she just showed up in with these two like diver wet bags, you know, that roll up and, you know, cinch together, and it fit everything, which is kind of interesting. So just unpacking the room service was kind of fun too.
That sounds so cool. Okay, so we've spent a whole lot of time on the ship, and we don't have a ton of time left here, but you had two ports. You had Dominica, and then you had Bimini. So let's talk a little bit about Bimini, if we can.
Yeah, Bimini is their private beach club. Again, it's on the property of Resorts World, which has, I guess, a resort in Bimini. I think at least one hotel under the Hilton brand. And so you basically hop on a tram, take you to the beach club. They've got, you know, pool area. They've got a DJ playing music during most of the day. I thought it was a beautiful place. I thought the beach was extremely nice. The pool was good. It's not quite as good as Coco Cay, you know, from the Royal Caribbean private island side. I would say Coco Cay is probably a superior product if you're a pool person. But if you're a beach person, if you like going to the ocean and you enjoy white sand, blue water, it's hard to do worse, or I'm sorry, hard to do better than the Bimini Beach Club that Virgin provides. I also had high expectations for the food here. It looked good. Again, if I were to Instagram, probably would be great. It's the selection and kind of what was available is not as good as what I thought. So I didn't think it was as nice as I thought. And I also ordered a lava flow kind of frozen drink. It was horrible. I only had one date. It's not like I ordered multiple drinks because I did not have a alcoholic beverage package, or I'm not too big a drinker. So I only ordered like one frozen beverage during this whole time. And the one time I did, it was like, bleh. I had like a maybe a little, I had a couple of sips on it. It was, yeah.
Oh, that's always unfortunate.
Yep.
You know, you try $14 something later. And you're just,
yeah.
Yeah, you're just disappointed. Anything of note with Dominica?
So the Dominican Republic, not Dominica, but Dominican Republic is where we stopped. We stopped in Puerto Plata, and it's kind of not that amazing. They did have a complimentary pool area that you could go. The water was not the best, but you know what? We were at the port and we, you know, going to spend a little bit of time in the sun. Of course, we got rained on, but we also got rained on in Bimini as well, which is kind of what you expect. You know, I think
it cools you down.
It does cool you down a little bit too much sometimes, but you know, it also clears out really fast. I mean, that's just the way things are in the Caribbean. But you know, I think that's a good segue into just one other thing that I would like to just make a quick thought of, which is I actually don't like cruising in the summer. I don't think the weather is as good. I mean, it's hot. I didn't find using the balcony quite as much as I probably would have if it was cruising in the, you know, January, February, March kind of time frame, where the temperatures are a lot more moderate outside. You know, I hardly used the public spaces on the ship that were outside because, you know, it was too hot. And of course, you're more subject to get rained on. I think, you know, hurricanes and tropical storms, you know, this happens to be, I mean, fortunately, I think our ship managed to miss most of it, but you know, this was around the time the tropical storm Debbie was in the Caribbean. So we were still experiencing some things.
I was definitely concerned for you guys. I was watching that and I was sort of like, oh, is this going to be a washout for you? But you're exactly right. I mean, especially as you get into August, September, you really get into that point where there's still families, but now you get the hurricane season. There is a lot there. Before we leave the Valiant Lady of Virgin, let's just talk a little bit, because we do talk often about casino gambling on the ship. Anything of note here? Any angles for, we don't like to talk in too much detail in this venue, but any opportunity, shall we say, for increasing spend or otherwise, you know, generating lots of miles and points?
I would say for Virgin, it's kind of a miss for that. They do have a casino on board. It's kind of small. It was nice. I enjoyed playing there. I was actually spending a couple hours there. Not a whole lot of time on this cruise. I did lose a few hundred dollars, but, you know, one of the things I didn't do is I didn't bring tons of cash. What I typically do on cruise ships is I charge chips at the table or charge money that I need for the slot machine directly to my room as a room charge. In this case, they are charging 7% convenience fee for that, which is pretty excessive. Kind of takes the, you know, winds out of your sails if you're going to be, you know, looking at any kind of miles and points kind of angle on this. So I would say it's probably not that. I'm sure there's some waiving of those fees at either higher levels of the casino gambling, or because they do have an elite casino loyalty program and there's a couple of different levels where you can reach. Again, not enough time has passed since this cruise where I've seen if they've decided to incentivize me with anything in the future. I really didn't gamble that much on here, so I don't know if I'm going to receive anything, but we'll see. But you know, I think for that matter, I think if you are interested in gambling, it might be worth actually bringing cash on board Virgin Voyages, at least if you're it's your first cruise.
That seems like a no-brainer based on what you said. Okay, so despite your founding dislike of summer cruising, you did another cruise. Before we close out, tell us just a little bit about what was different on your Symphony of the Seas cruise, this being the second cruise being a Royal Caribbean ship, of course.
It was, and it was not from Florida. It was from Cape Liberty in beautiful Bayonne, New Jersey. Not anyone's, I think, favorite port, but there's some advantages, you know. It has a beautiful view of the New York skyline. You can see the Statue of Liberty. You sail under the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. There's, you know, nice points about it. But generally speaking, the other big advantage is obviously you can get there without hopping on a plane. That's not what I did. I did actually fly in and out of there. But, you know, the biggest significant thing about this, because, you know, we've talked about Royal Caribbean before, so I don't need to labor.
I mean, and Nick, we've talked about this particular itinerary. I mean, we talked about this itinerary in March.
We've sailed this entire itinerary.
Your third or fourth. Yeah. We've sailed this together. You've sailed this three or four times.
By myself. I think more than once by myself, for that matter, I think. But it's a good itinerary. And, you know, obviously the jewel is Coco Cay. You know, I mean, that is really.
Oh, yeah.
That is the. And the fun thing was I did get to try out something new. You know, Coco Cay is constantly evolving, constructing, innovating, et cetera, et cetera. They opened a whole new area of Coco Cay, the island, kind of coinciding with Icon of the Seas, you know, joining the fleet. So there's a new adults only area, you know, that has its own dedicated beach, its own dedicated restaurants, its own dedicated pool. And it is an extra fee. I ended up paying about $29 extra per person to access this. And in my estimation, I was looking forward to it. I didn't know what to expect. It is adults only. This being the summer, and there being two ships, two relatively large ships, docked at Coco Cay simultaneously, I think I made the right decision. I think I enjoyed my experience. I think the money was well spent. The Hideaway Beach area is well done. There's this wonderful walk-up bar with a very, very large awning that extends quite far out from the actual, you know, bar area, giving great shade, you know, for all those people that want to kind of swim up and get a drink from the large, expansive pool, which is heated. Not so important in July or August, but very important for January, March, April, you know, February.
Yeah, remembering our March experience, that heated experience would be a big difference.
It was. Really good music, you know? I think the music selection was really great from the DJ and wasn't too obnoxious. Dining areas were really quiet. You know, again, they limit, I think, the number of people that enter these things because it is a for pay. The downside is it's dynamically priced. So sometimes if it's going to be a day where there's two ships there, it's probably going to be more expensive. If it's a day where there's only one ship there, it might be a lot less. But then again, your complimentary experience might be quite nice too. I didn't actually go to the Oasis Lagoon pool, the largest freshwater pool in the Caribbean, to see how it was reacting with two fully loaded boats in the summertime with all the families and the kids. But, you know, I think this is a good option.
You didn't even need to go there to know that you made the right call. That's what that sounds like to me.
I think so. So I just wanted to make a quick point about that. And, you know, and again, one of the downsides, I think, again, summertime cruising is you got lots of families. It's more expensive. The ships themselves are typically over 100%, you know? So when they say, you know, the maximum or the, you know, 100% occupancy is like, you know, 5,900 people. The reality is in the summertime, it's usually 6,000 plus people because, you know, there's cabins with, you know, families with, you know, one or two extra kids on top of the two human adults that are in there.
And yeah, so, you assume two people per cabin and you're getting three or four. Yeah, no, yeah. It makes total sense.
So,
TK, Tom, I think I speak for all of our listeners. Really appreciate you sharing your summer cruising experience and faring the friendly seas, even in the hurricane season, so that you can report back on these things. I think this Valiant Lady sounds like a wonderful experience. And given that sweet spot of being able to redeem, you know, between the Virgin point transfer bonuses and being able to use Virgin points, I have to believe a lot of our listeners are going to really, really find this episode valuable. And I would love for those listeners that choose to book themselves to share, you know, share their experiences, share their excitement. I personally, if we could, we'd be on a Virgin ship, you know, next year, without a doubt. It's just a little bit limiting with a young child. I'm just so glad you were able to share this.
And it was a pleasure. And I would definitely, you know, if that promotion comes out around again and there's that redemption of capability available, I would say pounce, you know, go ahead and book it. You're not going to be sorry. Great value. Of course, you know, they might devalue it. So if it's anywhere close to, you know, the rates that we mentioned on this podcast, I'd say go ahead and, you know, strike while the iron is hot and book it.
And I just hope those hammocks are still available by the time I get out there, because I will definitely spend a whole lot of time out on the balcony on a hammock.
Absolutely.
That said, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story. Thanks for listening.